I call order the House Committee on Healthcare. Vice Chair Richardson is on his way from a prior meeting and will be here very soon. Representative Gelser is around, and if we need her, can join us. We will not be hearing HJR 100 today. My intention is to pass 3614 tomorrow. Maybe we can put the amendments in today to pass it out tomorrow, and HJR 100 on Friday is the current plan. Then we may or may not have a meeting on Monday. It depends on Dennis Richardson. Professor Richardson is talking about inviting a guest who might be available to present some information. I probably won't be here at any rate, but we'll let you know as soon as we can whether we will be having a meeting on Monday or not. We have a few things to deal with in the 20 minutes we have. We have several amendments in your packet. I would like to consider for implementation adoption of this 1, 4, 6, and 7, although we could do 5 instead of 6 if we decide to do that. And we'll talk about what each of them are. And Sandy and Representative Kotek will discuss what these four amendments do and what the others that are also possible. What I'd like to do before we do that is I'd like to call Mrs. Sullivan to the stand. She has a little clarification of the fiscal that she reported to us, not changing any of those, or not changing very many of those numbers, but basically being clarification of the numbers that were in the bigger packet we got yesterday, specifically in relation to the amendments that we have in front of us. I do want to provide a caveat. I try to do something like this, and Vice Chair Kotek made very clear to remind me that this is not necessarily LFO's reading that will come. It's not that we'll be passing this bill to Ways and Means, not to the floor. So LFO may have a different interpretation, although Patty suggests that they usually listen closely to what DHS does. No, I'm going to open a work session on 3614. We still have testimony, right?
Absolutely.
I'll open a work session on 3614, and would you please talk about what you've distributed, which I very much appreciate.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Department of Human Services. And what I brought today, Judy Moore Peterson and folks put together, is sort of an updated one-page handout. Yesterday you had three pages with different options and different parts of the bill, and it was decided that the outreach and the outreach caseload would go away. So this just deals with the two parts of the bill that the amendments will address, and that is the 6 to 12 month recertification and the grant program. And the difference is the three options are still here that were on the three different pages for this part of the bill and implementation. But let's talk about option two, because I believe that the October 1st implementation is the one you're looking at.
Let's look at two and three, but I think we may want to look at three. But it'll be up to the committee
Decide. Great. Well, let's look at option two first. And what's gone from this are the TANF kids, because you asked for them to be taken out. And so you have admin cost savings, and you have Plum kids. And just to make sure that you understand that there's some initial admin cost savings, and that those are positions, but then some of them come back the second biennia, because it's just a workload decrease the first biennia and then comes back up the second biennia because you start stacking kids up. So just try to keep that in mind. And then the admin costs for the access grant were taken out. Public health redid it because we, again, we had some other grant stuff in there as well. So they looked back at their costs and decided that they could do this because they're one-time grants. They could do this with within existing resources. So you have those taken out, which leaves in general fund for the 07-09, you have a 0.5 million for the Plum Kids, a savings of 0.8 with an that's offset at, then at a savings of 0.3, and then below that you have the beginning of the grant program at 400,000. So they would start giving out grants and give out more the second biennium. The million is spread over 07-09, 09-11. Any questions on that one?
Mr. Chair, I do have one question, and that is about the allocation of grant monies.
Yes, sir.
There's not a threat. I mean, if Ways and Means were to say we're going to put $1 million into 4 grants, that next biennium, we don't spend it all this biennium, but next biennium, there's not a threat that that money disappear somehow. We have appropriated it.
Sure, there is. We can't buy in future.
Sure. Chair Grunick, Representative Maurer, if you were to get the $1 million up front, you would put it all in this biennium. You'd just move the money from the second biennium back to the first biennium. We just did it this way. You can move it. You can do 5 and 5. You can do 3 and 7. You can do it any way that you want.
But we can't buy in the future Ways and Means
no,
process.
No, you cannot do that.
But we don't carry over
money.
So we're only appropriating $400,000.
Well,
was that?
Go ahead.
I think it's. I'm not sure how these grants are supposed to operate, and this is one we have to leave for Ways and Means. But it is very clear that we are not appropriating things. They will not, in the Ways and Means process in this session, appropriate things for the 09-11.
Right.
So it'll be a sort of implicit assumption, but it's not a firm.
Chair Greenlick, I think I should clarify that. If I've run a grant program before, if you're given this amount of money to run a grant program and you let out 4 grants, there's always a staggered payment system in there, and you sometimes, it depends on the grant program, but you sometimes don't give the ending payment until they've accomplished all the pieces of the grant that they promised to. And sometimes that does go into the next biennia. You're appropriated the money here, you finish paying it there.
But they need to appropriate the whole million if we do that.
Correct.
So the impact on, if it goes that way, the impact on the 07-09 budget would be $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
If we do it this way, we have the beginning and a sort of starting process, and no guarantee that it will be appropriate.
Aren't we essentially
saying, we have a Ways and Means subchair here. We can.
This is a $400,000 grant, and next, and we hope that there might be $600,000 allocated in the next biennium, but we have no way of knowing that.
Well, except if we're talking about literally doing 4 $250,000 grants. My assumption is that we would award the grants, and I don't know how this is going to work. And they might be paid over the period.
Representative Green, look, we can't give out 4 $250,000 grants when we don't have $1 million. We can only give out 4 100s or 2 200s or 1 400, but we can't appropriate money. We can't promise people money because that's the next legislature that has to decide that.
Then, if that's the case, my assumption would be we are asking for $1 million appropriation, even though it only shows 400 here.
Well, but Mr. Chair, if I could clarify, if we make the amendment, if we make the amendment $4 million in the line item, that is indeed what we're asking for. This is an estimate that this is probably inaccurate then, because LFO is going to say, we need to say we have a million set aside, regardless if you spend it all the rest of this biennium. And that's why we probably want to look at option number 3, you know, no fiscal on the kid piece, try to shoot for the $1 million. And fight as much as we can in Ways and Means for that amount.
Absolutely. So, I think the impact of what we want, in fact, the impact of the amendment we're proposing, would be to put $1 million into this biennium.
Right. Current biennium, and it's done.
We're not done because it won't go.
Not done. But if it's 4 now and 6 later, it means 4 now, and that's it, because you don't know about the 6 later because that's then. And we have no control over that.
I suppose conceivably we could have $500,000 and fund 2 of them now. with the request for two more in the next if we get the money in the next biennium. But I think what we want to do is ask for $1 million now, even though it is a spent now, right?
Well, Mr. Chair, there's no agreement that Ways and Means will agree that we think $1 million at $250 a pop for the grant is a good idea. They might not agree with that number,
exactly.
But so.
Yeah, it's going to be in Ways and Means' hand. I hope we'll have a chance to negotiate within whatever range there is available for us.
They might think it's inadequate.
They might.
That's true. They might make it $2 million. Isn't that the way you used to do when you were subcommittee chair?
Let's be positive.
Mr. Chair, perhaps we should ask for $2 million so they can reasonably cut it back to $1 million.
I think if we ask for $2 million, it probably won't get scheduled for a hearing. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Do you want to
you have another table, right?
Yes. So you understand option three. It just it zeroes out because of the implementation date and then leaves the grant money. And we just split it this way for topic of conversation. You can put it, the grant money whichever way you want. The other page that we handed out, there was there's people like Representative Greenlick said that like charts with dots and squares and triangles on them, and then there's people that just like to see the numbers. And so what we did was we took the graph that you saw yesterday with the two lines going up, and we put it into a table, and it shows it's 2 years worth of data, and it shows the Plum Kids within the current 6 months. Eligibility the way it is now, and then right below that is with your bill for 12 months eligibility, and you start out for
January.
You start out in July. Well, this just starts out in July because we wanted to go out 2 years.
This would be the form of the bill that would be effective January 1st.
We would have to back it up for those months and those estimates. We just went ahead and started at July. Because that was the original bill, and that was the way the graph was as well yesterday. But we'll make a new one.
Doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Right, Judy?
Thank you, Judy.
So as you can see, if you go along, the first 6 months is the same amount of kids are enrolled on the top and the bottom, and that's estimates, of course. And then starting in January, you start picking up more that in the 12-month research. And you just go along, and at the end of 2 years, you end up with a slight increase if you stayed the norm with 6 months, and then you pick up quite a few kids but the rate of growth at the end slows down, as you can see, and it starts leveling off. So we just wanted to show you because that other graph was kind of hard to.
This is good. But if we move to a January 1st implementation date, then the difference between the top box and the bottom box would begin on July 09 rather than on January 09. And that would move across there. And it would carry it out for you.
That is with the assumption, am I correct, that you're starting with enrollments that take place after the effective date? But you just as easily, if you had the money and wanted to, could say any renewals are after the effective date, and then this would actually apply because it would be January 1, any six-month period as of that time would extend automatically, so which would make this chart actually.
Actually, if you did the other way, it would start in the first month, in the second month. Any 6 months that ended up in the second month would.
And just to clarify that, I believe that changes your fiscal impact.
I understand.
So it might be good to talk about. But
thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want a clarification on that, because if the 12-month eligibility only applies to new enrollees, or does it apply to current enrollees? Because if you have a child who's, and I think that's what Representative Richardson was suggesting, if you have a child who's been in for 5 months and then it's July 08, after that next month, is that child eligible for continuous enrollment, or is it only for children who start?
Their assumption is when the six-month period runs out, it will then get a 12-month enrollment.
Right, but what if it's month five?
Right.
No, it'll happen on month six, because they're there
right.
On month.
But it will happen every year.
Isn't that the assumption you made?
Which one?
When a kid's six month runs out, you re-enroll that person at that point, and you will re-enroll them for 12 months.
Correct.
I understand that. But
so they won't do it in the person's month five. They'll do it in the person's month six.
I understand that. But for, but say the effective date is July 08.
Yeah, I think the impact.
Where do you start counting?
I think you start counting in August 08. I think that because that's when they first run out.
But that's not what's done here.
I know it isn't.
May I clarify?
Please.
Okay. For the record, my name is Judy Moore Peterson. I am the Deputy Administrator for Finance and Policy Analysis. Thank you, Patty. How this works is that it, of course, applies to any new enrollees. So they walk in the door the first time we've seen them, and they would qualify for those 12 months. And then as a child comes up to be re-enrolled, for redetermination, if they're enrolled right now, as they come up, then and they're redetermined, then they are also redetermined at that 4-12 months.
I see. So and the feeling is they would have been redetermined anyway, so you wouldn't have lost them at that period.
Correct.
It's not
grandfathered in. In other words,
okay.
We don't go in and say, okay, you've been on, you were determined eligible for these 6 months. And we're not going to go in halfway through and say, okay, you've been on the rolls for 3 months, and now you get an additional, okay, or up to that 12 months.
And the assumption is those kids would churn as they would normally churn.
Right, correct.
Okay,
and those
sense.
Are the assumptions that were built into this, which is why you don't see an effect until January.
And then what I said is if we make it January, the first effect will be July.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I had a question for Representative Kotek when she suggested that if we want to minimize the fiscal on this, especially if we're going to ask Ways and Means for $1 million in the grant program rather than the $400,000 that's shown on our estimate from DHS, that we'd want to go with option three. My reading would suggest that option two, where we realize some cost savings on the admin, is actually the cheapest option for this biennium, but more expensive in the biennium to follow because we begin enrolling.
Excellent question, right. Representative Cannon. I have concerns about option two because while the department has identified savings, and that savings will happen, if we went with option three, that savings would happen essentially July 1 of the new biennium. We'll still get those savings. They would just be delayed.
Right.
My concern about going with option two is I think there's a risk of how LFO will interpret how the savings should be applied. And so the most clear-cut option of that there is no fiscal on the 12-month is option three. I am dubious of how LFO will interpret savings in option two and whether that will actually be applied to. I just have concerns about that.
It's a judgment call, and that's why I started with a caveat that this hasn't been confirmed by LFO.
Because so they could say, for example, well, the department should keep that savings for other things. There's no, and the department could make a sound argument to that, and then they could say yes, and then we'd have a fiscal.
It gets factored in a rebalance come April, which there will be one.
Right. Yeah, so there's it's a little bit more in flux than just saying we'll start January 1 of 09.
Yeah, it's just a sort of extra cautious approach on this one. Because they're going to do what they want anyway at Ways and Means, but I think Representative Kotek and I had a discussion that we want to make it the easiest for them to do what we've decided on a policy basis makes sense. And I think they prefer not to be making, well, I don't know what they prefer, but we prefer that the policy decisions be made here and the fiscal decisions be made there. Are there any other questions of our kind representatives? We need to be out. We have until about 20 minutes to 5. There's another committee coming in on top of us. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for staying on top of all of this with us, Bruce.
Actually, Mr. Chair, could we get an updated chart with the January 1? I'm sorry. Just because.
No problem.
That's right. Some of us aren't doctors. We could do it ourselves. I do need to announce I miscounted doctors in that earlier meeting. I forgot Dr. Maurer. Sideline. Okay.
I have hair.
That's right. You would fit in the doctors with hair category, not the doctors without hair. Representative Kotek or Sandy, whichever, would you run us through at least...
Are you sure?
Well, I suppose you should run us through all of them, and then we'll talk about them in some...
I'll give you a high-level, quick go-through, and then Representative Kotek can provide you with intent.
Color commentary.
That's right. Dash 1 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is deleting the entire Section 1. That would be page 1, lines through 5 through 17.
And then there's some renumbering.
Yes. Yeah, the rest of that is just renumbering throughout the bill. The Dash 2 amendments, we're still on page 1, Section 1, is deleting just lines 12 through 17, which is Section 1, Section 2 and 3, leaving in the streamlining language of Section 1, Subsection 1. That's the Dash 2.
No.
No.
Unclearly written, actually.
Unclearly written. Delete one.
It doesn't matter. I don't think we should do two anyway.
Line two doesn't make sense.
Well, some of
those delete seven, eight.
Delete line seven and eight.
I think the intent of Dash 2 amendments was to address my concern about leaving Section 1, Sub 1, about the streamlining and... that's currently in there, and just deleting Section 1, Sub 2, and 3. And I would like to have a conversation about that.
I think it'll likely get us a fiscal if we do that.
So it deletes Section 1 but leaves streamlining?
Yes.
Okay.
One more.
Let's go. 3?
But that's not the way it's written.
3 is modifying the grants, changing the rural grants from 1 to 2. 4... is inserting on page 3 a dollar amount instead of a blank, and we're inserting $1 million on line 9 of page 3. The Dash 5 amendments are changing the implementation date to October 1, 2008.
And that is just for the 12-month enrollment section, is that correct?
That is correct. The Dash 6s are changing the implementation date to January 1, 2009 for the enrollment language. And the Dash 7 is explicit language for addressing the poverty level medical children. We're explicitly identifying that the enrollment and re-enrollment is just for the...
Only
applies to the Plum children. And they've cited the U.S. Code definition of poverty-level medical children.
Let's do this in the easy way. Does anybody have any problem with 7? Which has basically been our intent all along, too.
Well, just for the record, philosophically, I have issues of excluding any population, but I think this... is not necessarily excluding. I think we're just clarifying. So, but I'm fine with it.
I'll concur with other people. Does anybody else have a problem? Can we have a motion to adopt 7?
I move that we adopt into House Bill 3614 the Dash 7 amendments.
Any discussion? Any objection? So moved. Any problem with the $1 million one? What's that, 4? Any problem with 4? Motion on 4?
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3614 be amended with the Dash 4 amendments.
We have a motion to amend 3614 with the Dash 4 amendments. Any discussion? Any objection? So moved. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
For Dash 7s, Representative Flores and I are concerned about that it doesn't necessarily read correctly. So can everyone else take a gander at that?
Do we have an LC around?
No, I think if you read it, Mr. Chair, It strikes lines 1 through 6 and inserts the quote enrollment for persons.
Well, maybe because it's on the other page.
Because
it has
southern.
The first syllable.
Pardon me.
Enrollment.
The N roll is on page 1 at the very end.
The
is that what you're
saying? The N is on. Oh, gotcha.
Right.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Mr. Chair, at the risk of saying something that pains me to say, the change in dash 7s, I hate to go back, if you're noting, it actually removes the reference to legal residence that people were somewhat concerned about.
Really?
It refers to the federal code to clarify.
Because that requires legal residence.
I know, and we had this discussion that actually does clarify you can only be a legal resident and be eligible for property. But I'm just pointing that out, that that language is leaving because we're referring to the federal code.
Right. Which does require that.
Right.
Which does require it.
Okay.
Okay, all right.
Now, I think we have a choice between 1 and 2. Right?
Thank you, Representative Kotek, for making that notation.
You're welcome.
We have a choice between 1 and 2. 1 deletes the whole section 1. Is there anything else? No, it's just renumbers. And 2 deletes most of them, but not all of them.
Mr. Chair, looking at the dash 2s, it appears the only thing it deletes, I don't know if this is a mistake in the drafting, but the only thing it deletes is maybe a word. I mean, it says deletes lines 7 and 8, but then reinserts most of it. It just sort of connects the sub 1 with the previous sentence. I mean, I don't think that dash 2s actually do anything.
It doesn't look like the dash 2s actually delete.
Anything. No, I agree.
Here's the subsections 2 and 3.
Yeah.
I think she made that the correction is made.
Is it a correction to something in
well, she yeah, I you it looks to be incomplete.
It's incomplete.
I agree.
Because she's added a sentence simplify, you know, that, but then still leaves 2 and 3. So I apologize.
Let's adopt 1 if that's okay with the committee, and we'll check with LC before tomorrow and see if there's something that we need 2 for besides what we thought it was. Right?
Mr. Chair, my only concern is if there is interest in the committee's part on maintaining, leaving alone any part of Section 1, then it probably would not be wise for us to go ahead and delete all of Section 1 today. We'd be better off getting an amendment that does what we want to do.
Well, let's test that question. Representative Kotek, I think this is your interest.
I would vote against the dash 1s.
Because you want to leave in?
I would like to leave in Section 1, Sub 1, which talks about streamlining and developing forms and processes that involve the folks who actually use the programs. I think that's good policy intent language, and would like it in there. And I don't think it has a fiscal.
Did we lose Patty?
No, she's out.
No. Okay. Can you join us?
I think she said they're already doing it.
I just had so much surprise about what language did to us. The last time we had language, and it came up with $165 million. Would it be safe to assume that leaving in, you're talking about leaving in sub 1?
Yes.
All of sub 1.
And 2?
No, just 1.
No.
Just
sub 1.
Sub 1. Just not
would,
1.
Would it likely that if we leave sub 1 in, it would create a fiscal?
Representative Greenlick and members of the committee, I'm Jim Edge, Administrator of the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. The thing that created the large fiscal was the word maximize on line 5, maximize the number of eligible children. So if you eliminated that first sentence of Section 1 and kept the subs, it would greatly reduce the fiscal impact of this section. And I'm not saying it would totally eliminate it, but it would greatly reduce it.
I asked a pretty straightforward question, I think, Jim, and you may not be able to answer it, but I think what Representative Kotek is suggesting is we leave that Section 1 becomes the wording of Sub 1. Is that what you were proposing?
Mm-hmm.
Is that likely to create a fiscal, is the question. So line 5 through 7 would be deleted, and line 12 through 17 would be deleted. All that would be left of section 1 would be the current sub 1.
Chair Greenlich, again, Patty O'Sullivan. The way I read sub 1 as a standalone paragraph with nothing else around it, it would not be a fiscal if we work within our current budget to do these things as they come up, like we're redoing the reapplication right now. We did have a group of advocates and clients and people, and we're doing that more and more. So this would apply to whatever new things we do come up with as we spoke with Representative Mowry yesterday, within our current budget, administrative things that we want to do to help the application process and streamline it. This would just apply to those and give us direction that we really currently do. But it would not fund a web-based unless we could find that money within our budget, and I think we were looking at that. So it would do everything that we could fund within our current budget, but the expectation shouldn't be that we would do everything possible.
And we could say within current resources, is that right? Would that mm-hmm. make it even clearer?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Kotek, do you think so? I mean, would that be acceptable? We can order that if that would be.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, in adding
within within current resources.
And where would you add within current resources?
I would delete. I think what we want to do, if we do this, is delete 5 through 7, include 8 through 11, and add in it, maybe at the end, within current resources, and then delete 2 and 3.
12 through 17.
Delete line 12 through 17.
And make subsection 1 just section 1?
Subsection 1 would be just section 1 with the addition of within current resources.
Mr. Chair? Can I please ask Mr. Edge and Ms. O'Sullivan if it would have a fiscal impact if we left in subs 1, 2, and 3, but said within current resources?
I think it absolutely
I'd squirm if I were Jim.
Yeah, but if we said within current resources, would it help give guidance that the direct assistance and the facilitating outreach and enrollment,
for example,
within current resources?
It has adults on line 15, and we were told adults is what we were told is some of the things we do here would create additional caseload. That's what that big fiscal
right.
was at the beginning.
Chair Greenlich and Representative Bonamici, that's right. There would be some fiscal from doing additional outreach to adults, and as you point out in line 15. So there is a little bit of cost, even at a reduced level in sub 2 and sub 3.
It's not the little bit of cost that was the issue. It was the finding new cases and the increase in the caseload that was the problem. I mean, that created the huge fiscal in your original.
Representative Greenlich, yes, you're right. The caseload costs that become program costs for providing the services to new people added a significant cost to the fiscal.
And Mr. Chair, it does sound like the word maximize is problematic. If we just had the one subsection one all by its lonesome, I'm not sure we need to say within existing resources or available resources, because honestly, I think this is good government and...
Yeah.
But assume that's what you're trying to do.
Well, so. What worries me is we send this over to Ways and Means, and we automatically, and then we find, oh, well, what that does when they go back home is it adds another $1 million to the cost of the...
Yeah. Chair Greenlich and Representative Kotek, it would help us immensely to put those words in there so that, because when this bill goes down to LFO, they are going to ask us, well, how do you intend to do that? And we're going to say, well, the intent of the committee, which in, you know, 2 years is gone, is that we'll do it within our current resources. So that's a tough one for them to swallow and a tough one for us to justify.
I think my preference would be available resources. If we're having chat here about current resources is rather
than... Oh, I'm sorry, available would be fine, sure.
Okay, so let's redebate this tomorrow. But let's ask council to create an amendment that section 1 is only sub 1, adding to it within available resources.
Within available resources.
So then, Mr. Chair, the discussion for tomorrow is what do we do with Section 1 and what do we do with the start dates on the continuous enrollment?
Right.
Is that correct?
And we'll have an Amendment 1 and Amendment 8 in front of us as two options for dealing with the first thing here. Senator Richardson has created a template for that.
Okay.
And we'll deal also with the two or with the specificity on how many rural projects.
Correct.
As well tomorrow.
And within cost of utilizing current resources or available resources.
Okay.
Better than within.
Okay. We'll see you at 3 tomorrow. We're adjourned.